Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to another episode of White Wine Question Time, Something from the Cellar, our midweek mini drop that allows us to revisit some of our vintage conversations. And this week, we're continuing to celebrate St. Patrick's Day with a look back at some of my favourite Irish guests. And first up, pop icons Keith Duffy and Brian McFadden. Together, they work as a collective known as Boys Life. But of course, their history is all about their time in two respective bands, Westlife and Boyzone, hence Boys Life. You see what they did there? Anyway, their chat is good, trust me. They tell us about how the Irish find support in community through the best and the very worst of times, whether that's applied to family holidays or funerals. What are the things that you do or have done or say or still say or traditions that you uphold that are inherently Irish? The stuff that only Irish people say and do and believe.
Well, I think just being Irish in general is something that never leaves you. You know, you see so many people that come out of Ireland, whether they be actors or footballers or musicians or politicians or whatever, businessmen, even businessmen you meet in Dubai and stuff. And they never change. They're all, the Irishness is always there. You know, yeah. And all these little things, the way they speak, the way they act, even the foods they eat, it never changes. Like, you know, I remember even when I lived in Australia, I was surrounded by a lot of Irish people. They never bloody changed. They still have their fried breakfast in the morning. They're still very picky about what they drink. Their clothes, even though...
You know, picky about what they drink.
But even they can't suck it out of a sock. What do you think? You know what I mean? They won't try Australian beer. They're like, I wouldn't drink that shit. No. I'll stick to me old text.
They would if there was nothing else in the room.
But like even clothes, like even down in Australia, they still wear bloody white socks with sandals.
They're sandals.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? They don't wear the sandals on their own. They still have to wear the socks with them. I can't get the clothes out. Yeah. No. So I think that is for me, you know, Irish people never change when they leave Ireland. They always
get the manners. The funniest thing, obviously we've changed because we got the opportunity of traveling all over the world and experiencing different cultures and living in different places. But a lot of most Irish people, they go on holidays to Spain or to Portugal or maybe the States, maybe further afield. But any Irish people that you meet on holiday, the first thing they look for is an Irish bar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Somewhere to get an Irish breakfast.
Go, where can you get the best Irish breakfast? You're on holidays in Italy. Go to an Italian bar and have some pasta.
Go into that shop there and see the Irish sun. Go and see what's going on at home.
You only got here today. It's unbelievable. We just don't like change. We like to keep everything exactly the same. And oh, great, Dolores. Look, there's an Irish bar. Remember where that is now on the way out tonight. You know what I mean? I bet you they have Guinness on tap in there. Now, it won't be the same as at home. It doesn't travel well. But it'll be grand. It'll do. Mrs. Doyle portrayed a great father, Ted. You know what I mean? If I bring anybody home, you know, it's like a nervous disposition with an Irish mammy. They'll go out and they'll make two fucking trays of sandwiches. They'll have a pot of stew probably on the stove. And it went, are you hungry? Are you are. You are. You have something small. Are you will. You will. Would you like a cup of tea? Are you go on. Actually, here's a few sandwiches I made earlier on. Sure, go on. They're only going to go to waste. You get another one in. Do you like a piece of cake? Yeah, I baked this yesterday. Sure. It's only going to go in the bin. You might, go on. You'll have another cup of tea. Will you have a bowl of stew? You must be starving. Look at you.
And then that's the other thing. Every time you come home, even if we feel like we put on weight, we come home and your mother's like, Jesus, you're not eating you over there at all. Have they no food in England at all? You're not eating nothing.
We could go home 2 stone heavier and your mother would still say, you're not eating right. Jesus Christ, have you no food over there? You need a good meal inside you. A good meal inside you.
And then out comes the sandwich. The staff are there.
It's the same thing when you have a family wedding, you know, and your auntie Patricia comes along, you know, and say, Auntie, what would you like to drink? Oh no, I'm off the drink. I just have a double Bailey.
Can we talk about the way the Irish do death? Because it's very different to the way we.
Great crack. We love death in Ireland.
The only difference between a wedding and a funeral in Ireland is one guest.
That's it.
This is it. exactly right. So
the
a very
father of the bride
is
not the
bay,
which is great.
So she's just buried her grandmother, and my God, it was like a 3-day party. It was brilliant the way that they celebrated her life. It was extraordinary. You hear someone dies, we all cry, obviously, because it's sad, but it's done in an afternoon.
Weeks as well. You think the players are supposed to say the problem with the UK is when somebody dies, it's weeks before you have a funeral.
Yeah.
If nobody died today in Ireland, today is what day is today? Saturday. Is it?
Yeah. You'd be buried.
Right. You'd be buried on Monday. You got to church on Sunday night. You'd be buried on Monday. Holding it out. When my dad died, unfortunately, about a year ago, my son was away.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that, Keith.
It was a really, really hard, difficult time, but. My son was away working and he couldn't get home. So we postponed the funeral by a day or 2 days. And it was torture because it prolongs that hard grief.
Yeah.
You can't really start grieving until the funeral, until the acceptance of the passing. And then you start to kind of get into the grieving process. But the whole process is prolonged. It doesn't start. The longer you delay the funeral, I feel. You know, you get some closure at the funeral and you could start to maybe mourn. But you can't mourn until the funeral. And in the UK, if somebody you love dies, they take weeks to bury them. I was like, come on. Like, it's so difficult. Because I lost my dad, and I know how difficult that is. And one of our musicians lost their dad. And they were waiting so long for the funeral. I was saying to him, Matt, how are you getting up every day? How are you dealing with it? I wouldn't have been able to deal with this waste.
You've got to get soldier, haven't you? Yeah.
And also, I mean, the way you do it is so different. You keep the body at home in an open casket, so that people can go in and spend time with their loved one and pay their respects.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, my dad was laid at home in his living room. My dad had his own parlour in the house, and it was his parlour. And myself and my brother, we stayed in the room for the... He got home, brought home on the morning, the day before the funeral. And we slept on the floor in his parlour with him all night until the next morning. And then we brought him to the church. You know, I mean, that's... You sit around the coffin, you tell yarns, you tell stories, you drink whiskey, you cry, you laugh, you sing. You know, it's a celebration. The wake in Ireland is great fun. People are coming in and out the door all day. The door's left open. You know, people come, pay their respects. People that you don't even know are coming in, you know, and you don't even ask any questions. It's
people come in just to get the free egg mayonnaise sandwiches.
The egg mayonnaise sandwiches cost me, you know.
Well, when my friend recently buried her grandmother, over 1,000 people turned up for the funeral.
Well, that lady left some legacy behind her, then.
She must have had a big will.
Yeah. She had a lot of great-grandchildren, over 40. Over 40 great-grandchildren.
How old was she when she died?
She was in her 90s, I believe.
Right,
in her 90s. Yeah. So she'd lived. But, you know, when you look at that, you go, wow, one woman has created like an empire.
Yeah.
By way of a family.
And the women of those days are real matriarchs. You know, you wouldn't cross them. They keep the family together. There'd be no falling out between siblings. There'd be no falling out between cousins. You remain, like, the blood in your system is very important. Families stick together, and the women, the matriarchs of the family, make sure that family stays together. A lot more than the father, a lot more than the patriarch. The matriarchs are much stronger. Women are much stronger in the later years than men are.
They're the CEOs, aren't they, of the family?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. For all the years that I worked with Louis, and you tell me if you've had this experience, but the way he would talk about his mother, he's like one of 9 children, yeah? And he'd talk about his mother like she was frail and old. Ah, me mammy. And for years, I just thought, oh, poor Louis' mum, like she's just probably in a rocking chair and wrapped in a shawl somewhere. And then one day she turns up at the X Factor. She's like bloody Cilla Black. She was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. His mother was a lovely lady. Years and years ago, after Boyzone went away from Ireland and had all our success in foreign territories and everything else, we came back to do a gig in Kilchimaugh, where Louis grew up. It's in the Midlands in Ireland, in Mayo. It's in the middle of nowhere. It takes 10 hours to drive from Ireland, but that's an exaggeration, because if you drove 10 hours from Dublin, you'd end up in the Atlantic Ocean. But Kilchimaugh, and we're down, and we're out. I think there's a place called Supermax, which is like a McDonald's, an Irish McDonald's. And they're in every little kind of town and village around the centre of Ireland. And I think we're outside Supermax. The boys, and we had seen Louis for ages and ages. It was months and months, because he never came on the road with us. Louis would always base himself in his office in Dublin. But like you said, he had 9 brothers and sisters. I think 3 of his brothers were guards in the police force, or the guards as we know them in Ireland. And his sisters owned the bakeries and blah, 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 blah. You know, and they're a well-known family. The Walsh family are well-known in Kilchimaugh. and we're outside Supermax getting a burger or something. I think it was Supermax. It might have been something else. And this guard comes over and explains that he's Louis's brother and that Louis's mother would love to meet us. And we said, well, we'd love to meet her because he'd always kept his family away from us. So the tour bus went down to Louis's family home where he grew up, where he slept. There was two bedrooms of the brothers and sisters. There was a three-bedroom house. A big house. The bedrooms had three double beds. The boys' bedroom had three double beds in it. But anyway, we went to the house. His mother cooked us all a big Irish fried breakfast. Louis had no idea we were there. He hadn't arrived. He was coming down on his own in his car later on that day. We hid the tour bus around the back of the house. We were all knackered and jet-lagged. We got well fed by his mother. And she says, the lads, if he's tired, you go on up to the room, the boys' room there, and have a sleep. And the five of us went up to Louis' boyhood bedroom, and we all got into bed and we went to sleep. And about 5 o'clock in the evening, there's a knock on the door. Louis's mother sent him up to the bedroom. She said, I was surprised for you up in the bedroom. He had no idea. And Louis went up to his boyhood bedroom, knocked on the door and walked in, and there's boys down asleep in all his brother's beds.
It's like a really weird version of Goldilocks. You both did brilliant impressions of Louis, and I know that at the time he must have tested your patience and then some, but there is always an affection I feel from you both towards him. Would that be right?
Listen, there's no point in ever falling out with Louis, because he says things in the press that will absolutely ruin you if you're sensitive. If you're self-conscious or you're sensitive, he says things in the spur of the moment to a journalist. They make it a headline and it sounds like he hates you and he's ripping you asunder. But he doesn't mean it. He genuinely doesn't mean it. He's just selling newspapers. So if you're going to get... Now, it takes you years to realise that and to let him away with it. Just recently, I did a Mario Rosenstock's podcast, which is a kind of a comedian that has his own radio show back in Dublin. And he does impersonations of me and he does impersonations of Louis and Brian and all that. He's very good. He's very clever. So I did his podcast. And I explained that when Boyzone started to become big and get really successful, Louis was afraid that, you know, the band were going to become bigger than the creator and possibly concerned that we changed management or something. I'm not quite sure. But to make sure we kept grounded, to make sure that we kept our feet on the ground, he would insult us in front of other people. And I remember he'd always introduce me to people as, this is Keith from Boyzone, the one that can't sing, right? And he'd always say that. And he used to make me feel that size when I was a kid. He'd kill your confidence. But we were very famous and we were doing very well. And I think he was trying to make sure that we didn't get too big for our boots. I didn't need that because all that was doing was destroying me. But, and you two, like I said earlier, were always my favorite band. So I told Mario on the show, I said, Louis introduced me to Bono as Keith from Boyzone, the one that can't sing. Now, Louis went and done the podcast last week. I did it about 2 months ago. And Mario Rosenstock brought up the story and he said we had Keith on. And he said that you introduced him to Bono as the one in the band that can't sing. And Louis completely denied it and started ripping me asunder. And then the headlines picked up on it. The papers picked up on the interview. And all of a sudden, I'm getting Google alerts on my phone go, Louis Walsh fights back to Duffy. Saying, why would I even introduce him to Bono? I gave him his only break in life. You know, but I spoke to Louis the next day and we didn't even mention the fact that we're all over the papers together. So like, it's off.
Next up is critically acclaimed singer, songwriter and poet Imelda May. She talks to us about her, well, extraordinarily funny times growing up in what sounds like a chaotic Irish family, with her dad, Tony, very much at the heart of it. Since recording this episode, Tony has sadly passed away. I love listening to her talk about him with such love and affection. So, Tony, this one's for you. You were surrounded by people from the get-go in life that sound like they worked from that mantra or that set of life rules, your dad being one of them. Your dad sounds like a real character. You were a big family in a small house. Have I got that right? And he was an eccentric art lover, is what's been reported. Does that seem like a cap that fits?
Well, my dad was a dancer.
He was
a dance teacher. He was a dance teacher, old-time dancer teaching. Arlene Phillips would love him.
Yes.
He had his... his own, he had a hall in his own school, and he'd teach people in it just locally, and he was really good. And
what kind of dancing, Imelda? Was it Irish dancing, ballroom, Latin America, all of it?
Old-time dancing, old-time ballroom.
Yeah.
But he likes the term old-time dancing because he said ballroom was a bit flashier for old times. So he danced beside Kim Novak in a movie and all this. They called him, and he was very, very graceful. And he met my mom, and that was it. He felt he got up to ask somebody to dance, and she said no. And he said he didn't want to go back across the floor, in shame. And then he turned and he saw my mother sitting beside him. He said, well, would you like to dance? And she said, yeah, sure, why not? And she got up to dance. And he said, from that moment, he said, I've never felt more comfortable with any other human being in my life. Aww. I felt it was the first time I could be me. And that was it. And he was only, I think, 25, and she was 31. And then they got married, and he couldn't make ends meet because he blames the 60s. Everybody was dancing on their own. And he picked a job out of the paper, and it was, he just kind of put his finger down and picked out, and he became a painter and decorator.
No.
And he was all of a sudden in this kind of man's world.
Having been a ballroom dancer. Wow.
Yeah, it's quite an unusual story. And my mom, one of my earliest memories is my mom taking me to a protest in the pram. She gave me a placard in the pram. I was only about 3 or 4. And my mom would fight for rights and be very headstrong. And she was a seamstress. So they were really good. And they had an equal marriage and an equal relationship within the home. So I was brought up thinking that was normal. You know, they both respected each other. They'd kill each other over remote control, you know, usual. Where did you put that? Which one? There's 8 of them.
Exactly. But the way you've spoken about, I mean, for example, some of your dad's building works, right? This just tickled me so much. Let's talk about how he turned your 2-bedroom house into a 3-bedroom house by not adding an extra room, but a Perspex box around a staircase.
Oh, my God, you've really looked into this. Yes, you're such a pro. My dad, we needed more room.
Sounds like the worst bedroom ever, by the way.
Well, no, we needed another room, and it wasn't a Perspex bedroom. No, it was he knocked down the staircase. Because he thought that would make a good box room, that like a tiny, that's another room. So we thought, I'll do that. So we knocked down the stairs, and where the staircase was, he turned that into a tiny little bedroom that we couldn't fit a bed in. You had to fold out. It was a fold-out bed. But it was half of a bed that you'd fold out when the door was closed. And then he built a staircase, a spiral staircase, in him and my mom's bedroom, which also had me and my brother till I was 14. So,
yeah, you shared a room with them, didn't you?
Till I was 14, yes. It's only a couple of years ago that I discovered that he wasn't tickling her. And then around this spiral staircase, he built this Perspex box. Before he put the stairs in, we had bunk beds in the room, and he just knocked the hole out of the floor. And our bunk bed was, the leg of it was about that much from the edge of it. And he said, just don't move, don't bounce in the bed. You'll be grand. So we used to sleep like that for a while before it was like on the edge of this drop. But he set up mirrors because he thought it'd be really fun if we could watch telly from bed, from the sitting room.
Via a mirror?
Via a couple of mirrors. So we could watch it. It was underneath us in that way. And we were sitting in the bed watching the telly with these mirrors. He was bonkers. So he built his perspex.
I love him.
Around the stairs. And he had his own way. I think he was making a pulley system for my mom for nappies, changing nappies. She'd do that. And come up and all the stuff would go back. He has his own way, you know. He has his own way.
Did he not build a three-story bunk bed because there were so many of you? Is that the one that you were just talking about where your brother would constantly sort of like literally be an inch from the ceiling as he went to sleep?
Yes, that's why he got the stair. That's why he got the stairwell into a bedroom, because he was in the other box room and there was my two sisters were complaining that they needed space without my brother. They were all getting older, and my dad made the bunk bed. He got a single bed and nailed it into the top of the bunk bed. It was a 3-tier bunk bed. My brother used to sit up and smack his head off.
It's just brilliant. And then I fell in love with your family holidays. Yeah. So your dad would say to you like, right, kids, do you want a nice meal or do you want to have rolls and go to Morocco? And you'd all say,
Morocco.
And how did you get to Morocco?
There was an early boat and we went on the early boat. We were in France or Spain or somewhere, and we always got the earliest ones or the latest ones because they were cheaper.
In your car, in your family car?
In the family car, although that they always broke down. So Dad was always underneath the cars and he'd befriend people, and my mum. And we end up, I remember when we were in Morocco, I think we ran out of money or something. And we ended up this antique dealer. We were getting chased down the road by somebody. I don't know why. I was young. Maybe they hadn't got enough to pay for, but I don't know. And they got chatting to this antique dealer earlier that they were all just looking, saying, oh my God, your place is amazing. You're doing a great job. What an amazing person you are. And he said, come here, and brought us in. And then he brought us down to this lovely restaurant and bought us all dinner. And another time we broke down in France and the mayor of the town hired a car for the family so we could drive back and then shipped our car back. That we're, my mum and dad used to just make friends with people and I think they just fell in love with them and everything always turned out okay.
Honestly, reading your interviews talking about your childhood, I just desperately want to be a member of your family. I want to know them. I want to have dinner with them. I want your...
They're great.
They sound so... They're just fueled by adventure.
Yes.
Or certainly the way you tell it. Because didn't you... There was five of you kids. How did you get five kids in a regular car?
Well, there was four in the back and then we used to split the time between the fifth one either had to lie across... And when it was my brother's turn, we'd open the window and his feet would stick out.
Because
I was the youngest, what often happened was Mam used to put a little area for me in the footwell of where she sat. So I used to sit in there. And Dad had this thing where he used to do, he wanted to do a bit of health and safety. We'd no seatbelts around. So he used to just shout, emergency, and we'd have to dive down just to practice.
And that was his health and safety, with your brother's feet hanging out the window.
Emergency, we dipped down, and we often laughed later on, thinking, imagine being in the car behind, where there's seven people, and all of a sudden, one. And then seven again.
It's brilliant.
It was just, but it was bonkers. Once, actually, I remember for quite a while, because Dad always had an old car, second-hand cars. And I remember the windscreen wipers stopped working one way. They went that way, but not that way. So Dad tied a string to them and put it through into me mum, and then it would go like that, and me mum would pull it. And we met them. For months like that, man pulling the string.
Honestly, you've got to do this. Is a sitcom. Why have you not written this? It's brilliant.
That's on my list of things to do. I want to write a non-fiction comedy, like a real life, but
so good.
The madness of it, and it was just lovely. The dad would draw, put a mural up if he wanted, and Mam was always encouraging him to do these things. They were very creative. Mam was all, made all her clothes, and you know, they were really, they're really special, very special. I'm very lucky, very blessed to have been brought up in such a bonkers house, like, you know?
Yeah.
They encouraged us. My brother decided to make canoes, and they go, brilliant, that's a great idea. So then in this tiny house was full of canoes. Mam balanced them on chairs. We'd have to go underneath them to get into the kitchen.
And then get in the car where you've got to pull the windscreen wipers while your brother's feet are hanging out the trunk. I mean, and you're like, when you're talking about these holidays, you used to drive everywhere on these holidays. So you could be for hours in the car like that, I would imagine, driving across Spain, Germany.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. We were all over the place, yeah, for hours. And we just loved it. We had a great time. I remember once my sister fell out of the car. And the door was faulty, and we went around a really strong turn like that, and we all went, and when we came up, Adele was gone. The door had opened and closed again, and she was back on the road. I was going, Dad, he's going, oh, what, we just stop complaining. And I was going, Adele's back there on the hill. We just go back together.
She's right. Poor Adele.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
And last but not least, we have television presenter and sports broadcaster Craig Doyle, who hilariously walks us through a moment that happened on live television that resulted in what can only be described as a very happy ending for a duck.
It was an extraordinary time, wasn't it? Because we were making this TV show that was watched by 6.5 million people a week. Okay? You think about that now.
I know.
And there was no social media. There was no scrutiny. You just went off and did whatever you want. I mean, we just had the biggest nights out. Absolutely. Wherever you are in the world, you know. And, you know, not nasty stuff, just fun. And there was no repercussions, no one snapping you, no stories,
no camera phones,
nothing. But the other side of that, what was weird about it was that I spent my whole time on the road like you, and I do 28 trips a year.
Yeah.
And you'd be four of you away, so you're on this show that was watched by millions and millions of people, and you'd be in magazines and all that stuff over here, but you'd come home and you didn't feel like you were in TV. You didn't know anyone because you hadn't met anyone, because you're on your own with the crew. And I'd go off, and I was living in the flat with a couple of mates, and like, he'd play J5's rugby.
Yeah.
You know, it was so weird. They'd be like, oh, yeah, on TV, you must have this. I was like, no, it's as normal as it could possibly be. And we'd go to those nights out, Kate, and I'd be so completely intimidated by everybody at the table. I remember sitting beside Jeremy Clarkson at a dinner at the Groucho Club.
I'm sorry.
Years ago. And he was just, he just made me feel really uncomfortable for two or three hours. And I never went home again. I remember taking a cigarette off and he was beside me smoking Marlboro Reds. I'm like, I was shaking with fear because I was, Louis Theroux was there, all these amazing, and Jeremy Clarkson is an amazing broadcaster, right? All these people I really looked up to. And I remember I said, hey, sorry, Jeremy, Mr. Clarkson, could I have one of your cigarettes? I just have to do something. And he gives a cigarette and he's to the whole table and goes, hey guys, thank fuck he's human.
What's that supposed to mean?
I don't know. And then he started rubbing my face, going, look at this fucking skin.
What?
I don't know what he was doing. I know I left shortly after.
Wow. That's sort of passive-aggressive compliments. I don't know.
I think he was just being ladsy, but maybe I kind of looked up to him quite a lot, and I just couldn't cope with that. Just because we weren't, like, as you said there, you're away all the time, so you're not in the scene, so you just weren't able for it. And I remember being put up for a quiz show. It's a long time ago. And I went to do the quiz show, and the bosses of it turned around to a friend of mine and said, who was also on TV, and said, we like Craig, but we hear socially he's very, very boring. I didn't get the idea. I'm like, you have no idea what I'm like.
Where did that come from? Socially, he's very, very boring. Why does that mean that you're not qualified to host a quiz show?
Because socially, I was very boring. Because I guess, Kate, I was going to these, or not going to these do's, but when I would go, I'd stay for half an hour and just be a bit intimidated and leave. I was very shy in the environment. And I think in our business, everybody always seemed loud and gregarious and confident. And I'm like, I'm not like them. And our era had some brilliant broadcasters. This was the Jamie Theakston, Zoe Ball time. And you're like all these great people. And I never really felt a part of that.
Do you know, it's really interesting that you say that, because being a part of that team at that time, certainly within the travel department, they spoke about you with such reverence. And you were, you know, you were, I guess what Holly is on This Morning Now, you were the figurehead of everything that sat underneath it. So we all, you know, I didn't sense any of that. I thought that they had huge respect for you, huge plans for you. You know, you were the chosen one, the golden boy. It was the gig of all gigs, right? You'd taken it over from, who had done Holiday before?
Poor old Jill. Poor old Jill Dando.
Jill Dando, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Geez, you're no stranger to stepping into some big old shoes, are you?
Yeah, it's... That's show business, yeah.
Isn't it just? It
is. I mean...
talking of show business, how did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
Just good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
Duck in hell.
So, I love animals, right? I mean, not that much.
Not much.
And I don't know. I'm weird with animals. I melt. We had seven puppies in the studio today. I just melt with animals. And... I'm talking to this duck and I'm rubbing its tummy and it goes, just starts doing this weird thing. It's like, it goes into this trance. And then I think I'm like, it has a pee. And I'm like, oh no, the duck's had a pee. And the other goes, that's not pee. As this white liquid streams from her underbelly. She goes, you've just made her very, very happy. I had ducks dropping into my DMs for weeks, I tell you that. Sliding in.
Oh my goodness. So, but then, do you know what you did? You just recovered brilliantly. You sort of laughed it off and threw back to the studio. You just rolled with it.
So there's a great thing that happens, Kate, as you get older in television and you literally stop caring what people think.
Oh, yeah.
You just don't care anymore. And it's so liberating. And it makes you a much better broadcaster because you're not concerned. You're concerned about the show. And, you know this show needs to be these things. And you'll do that. And if you end up being the punch bag or coming out of it a bit stupid or a bit undignified, you don't care. And it makes work so much more fun. And I work with some young people and I can see them worried about what people might think. And it holds them back, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know, I just roll with everything now. It doesn't matter.
Even Bill Murray.
I cleaned up a dog poo. I cleaned up a huge dog poo live on telly today.
Did you? Yeah, but if you've got four dogs at home, haven't you? That's like, you know.
Dogs, cats, everything, kids, yeah. Everyone's pooing. Everyone's pooing in my house.
Exactly. You're just one big poop scoop.
That's it. Poop, spook, scoop, toilet unblocker. That's what I do.
Bill Murray, that was one you didn't really see coming. It's one of those kind of tales of be careful what you wish for, because John Goodman from Roseanne was in the crowd watching this huge game of, was it baseball?
It was baseball, yeah. It was one of the London series. It was a proper Major League Baseball game. So the Cardinals were overplaying, and it was great, you know, the whole against the Cubs, Chicago Cubs. So Bill Murray is a Cubs fan, and John Goodman is a Cardinals fan. And on the first day, play over 2 days, the first day is I interviewed John Goodman. And I don't know, he was very reflective. We had an interview last about 5 minutes. And he got quite upset. It was really interesting, quite emotional during it. And what a lovely man, you know. The next day they said, Bill Murray's here. We're going to send him over to you. He's going to give you 1.5 minutes. That's it. I'm like, that's fine. That's fine. So Bill Murray comes over. I'm completely in awe. It's goddamn Bill Murray, you know. And just before we go live on the break, I said, Bill, how do you want to do this? And he said, what do you want to do? I said, whatever helps you, man. And he goes, I'll play it straight, throw in some questions, then I'll play around for a minute, and then we're done. I said, beautiful. And so it's fairly straight going, and then he starts messing. I can see he's getting a bit giddy. And then I spot John Goodman over the far side. I'm like, John's here. And he goes, all right. I said, do you want to say hello to him? He's like, yeah. So can we get a camera on this? The two of us start climbing over barriers, and then it just kicks off. And he's throwing stuff, and it's chaos for 8 minutes.
He was singing Sweet Caroline. You had to join in, didn't you?
Yeah, sang Sweet Caroline with him. He's throwing stuff everywhere. It's just kicking off. But it's chaos. But on the final bars of Sweet Caroline, he manages to open a baseball cap, stick it on my head and shake my hand and walk out of shot as the music ends. Like, he knows what he's doing. But it was cool. It was great. It was great.
See that those moments I love. I think that's when you really come alive doing the job that we do. It's also where you earn your money. So for me, I welcome those moments, but I know some people would literally, you know, lose sleep at the thought of it.
That's when it's at its best. OdaQ, you could do that all day. It's doing your sleep. That's the chaos is the fun stuff. And actually, off the back of that, I'm the new host of ITV's NFL show with OC and Jason. Which starts this Friday, yeah, because the NFL saw that stuff and went, who's this guy?
So he did you a massive favour.
Correct.
Next time you need a job, who are you going to call?
Bill Murray. Good, I
Bill
see what
Murray.
You've done there.
Got it?
Very good.
I'm here all week. Thank you, as always, for joining me for another trip down to the White Wine Question Time cellar. If you'd like to hear any of those episodes in full, just search for the guests by their name, where you'll find, well, in our back catalogue, over 300 episodes. And today, you're looking for Boys Life, Brian McFadden and Keith Duffy, Imelda May and Craig Doyle. Oh, before I go, one more thing. Remember, you can always find us on Instagram for all the latest about the show. We're at @whitewine_questiontime. And also, please hit the follow button on Spotify. It's really, really helpful in terms of us being able to find you. I'll be back on Friday with another brand new guest. Until then, thanks as always for your company.
White Wine Question Time is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.